Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I'm your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning here on the GCN network, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths which are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, with military and economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes will eventually be opened and you may ultimately change your mind for some of these things. Typically, during our second hour, we engage God on his terms, but this is IQ Friday, so we will reverse our order of things today, and we will begin where we normally end, with the Torah, and then we will move in our second hour to a discussion on a list of things. It's a short list, about 40-some-odd things that each individually prove that the Islamic Quran is a lie. The advantage of doing that, of course, is that once the foundations of Islam are destroyed, there is really no reason for that cancer to exist, because it is the most destructive, the most deadly, the most damning cancer in the world today. Our phone number for those who would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said over the next 2 hours is 877-300-7645. And our second hour, just as I have invited Roman Catholics to defend their revolting religion and revolting clerics, same thing would be true with Muslims. If you are a Muslim listening to this program and you think that you've got an answer for anything that we're going to say in the second hour against Islam, have at it. This is the statement that we were considering really in the last two programs. We're going to return to it and conclude our thoughts on it today. We turned to the Mizmor Song, Psalm 19, because we were looking to be able to understand the creation account better. Yahweh almost routinely explains the terminology that he uses in his Torah, in the Psalms. That is the primary reason the Psalms and also the Proverbs exist, is to help us understand the themes that are presented in the Torah. For those interested in learning more, for understanding more, advancing their level of appreciation for what God is offering us, the place that you turn for answers is the Psalms. And so we did, because God speaks about the energy that he used to create the universe. He talked about how to calibrate his timeline. He talked about the nature of energy and the fact that it cannot be destroyed in this psalm. And then he did something that's kind of interesting. After doing this, he talks about the diminished human manifestation that is set apart from him, Yahusha, and talks about his many arrivals and departures from planet Earth. You know, he has been here six times in corporeal form, in a material form. He spoke of that, and then he said something that you might think would be wholly unrelated from this conversation on the universal laws that are in place that govern the universe as we know it. And you know, keep in mind that the universe is nothing but energy, with the sum of that energy organized by a communication medium to become matter, which is exactly what God said that he did. He took some of his energy and spoke it into organized matter. And so in the midst of that, God speaks of his Torah. Yahweh's Torah, and we've spoken of this, but he just cannot say it enough times. It is Yahweh's Torah. If you know someone who is religious and has a hostility to the Torah because they think it is a Jewish document, think again. It isn't. The Torah has nothing to do with the Jewish religion even. It is never, ever identified as the Jewish Torah. It is Yahweh's Torah. Yahweh is God's one and only name. And so if you don't like the Torah, if you are adverse to the Torah, understand you are being adverse to God himself. Your disagreement is with God himself. I said the Torah doesn't even have anything to do with the Jewish religion, and I say that because they're married to the Talmud. Any Jew will tell you, and even Jewish websites, if you will examine them, they'll tell you the same thing, that the Torah is the Torah that they follow is what they call the oral Torah, which they say was passed down as an impossibility. It's also incompatible with the scriptural testimony. But, you know, religious myths are as they are, that it was it's this oral Torah that was given to their elders and has become the Talmud, which is nothing but rabbinical arguments, nothing else. And so it is the Talmud and the Mishnah and other rabbinical positions that Jews observe, not Yahweh's Torah. Anyway, it is Yahweh's Torah. Torah does not mean law. That's the second most important thing that you can come to appreciate, because when you recognize that laws are that which need to be obeyed, and there is no Hebrew word for obey, and the Torah is actually a source of teaching, instruction, guidance, and direction, which are things that you learn from, all of a sudden, all of the conflicts that have been thrown up in people's faces, particularly the religious, to avoid the Torah, go away. And the principal argument against the Torah is, you know, there are things in the Torah that speak of the Lowi, which are the priests who officiate on behalf of Yahweh, and they, if they exist, they are unknown to us. They are unknown even to themselves. And there are instructions of things to do in the temple, but the temple no longer exists. And so they just dismiss it and say, you know, since you can't do a bunch of things, therefore, you know, how are you supposed to pick and choose what applies? Well, if the Torah was a list of do's and don'ts and of laws, and many of them could not be accomplished, then that would be a valid point. That's why this perspective is so important. The Torah is a source of teaching, the source of guidance. Therefore, anything that is described can enlighten us, even if it cannot be done. You know, if God describes how he wants the furniture arranged in his temple, and you say, well, that's a thing to do, and I can't do it, then you've missed the point entirely. If he explains where he wants the table, what he wants on top of the table in terms of bread, how he wants the lone physical manifestation of his teaching to be displayed, and how he wants it made, which is a menorah, a seven-candle menorah, six plus one, conveying the concept that lays at the foundation of everything that God communicates to us. And of course, it being comprised of oil lamps with the symbolism of the oil representing the healing and enlightening nature of the Spirit. And emphasizing this six plus one concept that God is so, focused upon. And so, rather than looking at it as, all right, this is how it is made, and this is where it will be displayed, you think about instead of, what does that menorah teach me? What can I learn from it? What is God communicating to us by way of it? And so, everything that God has to say resonates. It has a purpose. It has value. You can learn something from every single discussion. And therefore, as teaching, which is the meaning of the word Torah, every aspect of it is valid, useful, just as Yahusha said it was. Yahusha said that not even a part of any one of the letters which comprise the words in the Hebrew script that makes up the Torah will be annulled. That's how all of them are meritorious, even though many of them cannot be done, because it's not about obeying, it's not about doing, it's about observing so as to understand and responding to the offers that are being made. So Yahweh's Torah, his source of teaching and instruction, the place from which direction and guidance from Yahweh flow, is wholly complete and entirely perfect. Once again, what this means is that there cannot be a New Testament. It means there cannot be a Quran. There is no reason for a last messenger. There is no reason for a different message. There is no possibility of a different message. If the Torah is entirely complete, then nothing can be added to it. There cannot be a New Testament. If it is entirely perfect, there is no reason, no way to improve it. You can't improve perfection. But as we said, there's something far more valuable to this statement than just the fact that the Torah lacks nothing, which means that it is the source of every answer that we as humans need to understand, to know God and to engage in a relationship with Him. And that is that in the third of the five requirements to participate in the covenant, which, by the way, is only presented in the Torah and no place else, which means it's impossible to engage in a relationship with God without studying and responding to the instructions that are presented in the Torah. God says, walk to me and become tamim. Perfect. Well, now you know how to do that. Study the Torah. Respond to the means of perfection that is presented in the Torah. And there is only one day in the Torah that specifically provides our perfection. It happens to be the second of seven steps to God. The first, Passover, makes us immortal. The second, Matzah, makes us perfect in God's eyes, so that on the third day we can be adopted into His family. Bukurim. He then says, returning and restoring, transforming, shub, the soul. There is no such thing as bodily resurrection. It is our soul that ought to matter. It is our soul that is either destroyed at the end of our lives, ceasing to exist. It is our soul that is incarcerated in Sheol if we lead people away from Yahweh. And it is our soul that is adopted into Yahweh's family, that is covered and adorned with the garment of light, is scrubbed clean on matzah, becomes immortal on Pesach, and receives our adoption papers on Bukurim, first fruits. It is our soul that we should want to have returned, restored, and transformed, and it is Yahweh's perfect and complete Torah that provides that restoration, that salvation. All right, we will return to this statement when the Shattering Myths returns in a moment.
Gold.
Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. You can engage in this discussion, 877-300-7645. One of the interesting things about songs, we call them psalms in English, they're mizmor in Hebrew, which means they're lyrics to a song, and the lyrics are set to a melody, is that they most often deploy Hebrew poetry. Now, Hebrew poetry is a thinking poetry as opposed to a rhyming poetry. You know, in English, most poetry is designed to either rhyme or to have a cadence and therefore have a rhythm. In Hebrew poetry, it's all about understanding. And so the way Hebrew poetry works is God will inspire a statement and then will provide a symmetrical statement that provides information on the same subject, but from a slightly different perspective in using different words, so that your understanding is enhanced when you put these concepts together. And that's how this statement, this Mizmor Psalm 19:7 works. The first statement is Yahweh's Torah, His teaching and source of guidance and instruction, is wholly complete and entirely perfect, returning, restoring, and transforming the soul. The second half of the couplet is Yahweh's testimony. So this time, rather than using Torah, he's using testimony. It's still Yahweh's testimony, but it's testimony. Testimony is eduth. It's enduring witness and restoring testimony. And so what he is saying here is that his Torah is his testimony. Brings us right back to what he began with in the beginning of this program. If you've been conditioned by Pauline doctrine, if you've been conditioned by the verbal diarrhea of Muhammad to hate the Torah, if you have been conditioned and indoctrinated by socialist secular humanists to despise the wrathful God who they have replaced with their seminal knowledge, and you've come to look at the Torah as a document of a bygone era that no longer is pertinent, then I have news for you. God here, Yahweh, who proved, by the way, his existence and proved his authorship of this book through thousands of precise prophecies, all of which have either come true or are being manifest before our very eyes. The very God who proved his existence and proved that he authored this book and proved, as we shall continue to see as we examine his creation account, that he is the creator of the universe and the author of life, said that the Torah is his testimony. So when we look at the Torah, it is Yahweh's testimony. Therefore, when Paul assailed it, he was assailing the testimony of God. Now we have two witnesses, Paul, but I say, and Yahweh, here is my Torah. You can choose one of them, but not both of them. Who do you think was telling you the truth? Who do you think is more dependable, Yahweh or Paul? So it is, the Torah is Yahweh's testimony. What God is saying here, the first time he says that it is wholly complete and entirely perfect. This time, what he is saying is that it is trustworthy and reliable. Same concept, different angle, different perspective on the same thing. If something is perfect, it has to be trustworthy and reliable. If something is complete, it has to be verifiable, confirming, establishing. And that is why in the second statement, God is saying that his testimony in his Torah is entirely trustworthy, totally reliable. It's instructive, informative, verifiable, confirming, and establishing. You can rely upon it. I shared with you that the third statement relative to our participation in the covenant is to walk to God and become perfect, and that was answered by Tamim, because it is walk to God and become Tamim, and this is the Torah is Tamim. Well, the second of the instructions on in terms of participation in the Torah is trust and rely upon Yahweh. Trust and rely upon Yahweh. How do you trust and rely upon Yahweh? Well, he just told you here. He said Yahweh's testimony is trustworthy and reliable. Where do you find Yahweh's testimony that is trustworthy and reliable? In his Torah. When you put these things together and you juxtapose them to the terms and conditions of the covenant, it all falls into place for you. Your questions, should you have them, are answered. So Yahweh's testimony is trustworthy and reliable, making understanding and obtaining wisdom simple for the open-minded. Now we're going to compare that when we return to returning, restoring, and transforming the soul. And see what they have in common. To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada, and in this case, a tour guide. What we're doing is taking a tour through Yahweh's testimony. There is something that I missed that I would like to swing back around to. I told you that the second and third requirements for participation in the covenant were directly delineated here. The third requirement is to walk to Yahweh and become perfect. God is saying that Yahweh's Torah is perfect, Tamim. That's how you do it. You walk through the pages of the Torah, and you will become perfect. I also shared with you that the second requirement to participate in the Torah is to trust and rely upon Yahweh. And Yahweh is saying that his testimony is trustworthy and reliable. So all you have to do to trust and rely upon Yahweh is to come to embrace, to come to accept, to come to trust and rely upon his Torah teaching. What I did not share with you is that the first requirement for participation in the covenant is to walk away from your country, to walk away from patriotism, to walk away from politics. The country that God has asked us to walk away from is Babylon. That is where Abraham had lived. God said, I want you to leave Babylon. Ur of the Chaldeans, Ur was a city in southern Babylonia. There is more ink dedicated to exposing and condemning the political and religious, the military and economic malfeasance of Babylon than any other foe. It is directly associated with Hillel ben Shakar, who is Satan. And so God is asking us, and because he goes to great lengths to describe what Babylon represents, that it represents the political and religious, military and economic schemes of the adversary, that God wants us to walk away from those things. And the reason he does is not only because they are corrupting, but because they are not reliable. That those who depend upon them, as more and more people are doing around the world, that they will find them unreliable. So by saying here that his Torah is entirely complete and perfect, which is the antithesis of human religious and political schemes, they are neither complete nor perfect, and that his testimony is trustworthy and reliable, what he is doing here is saying that it stands as the antithesis of that which he's asking us to walk away from: religion, politics, economic and military schemes, our country, so that we can walk to him. Now, the fourth requirement to participating in the Torah is to observe the covenant itself. Observe, shamar in Hebrew, is presented as focus upon, closely examine and carefully consider the covenant. That's the fourth requirement. Now, how does this verse apply to that? Well, what it's saying here is that Yahweh's Torah is complete and entirely perfect. So if we're to examine and consider the covenant, well, then the place that we are assured will present it completely and perfectly is the Torah. If we are to come to rely upon that covenant as we come to understand it from our examination of it and our evaluation of it, we are assured here that it is trustworthy and reliable because it is included in Yahweh's Torah. Now, as we look at the comparison between these two, so we have Yahweh's Torah and Yahweh's testimony being things that correspond. The Torah is God's testimony. It is his enduring witness. It is his eduth. Torah, teaching, and eduth, testimony, are synonymous. Complete and perfect are being compared to trustworthy and reliable. We can trust and rely upon the Torah, God's testimony, because it is complete and perfect, lacking nothing. This is where it gets especially interesting. God said in the first stanza that the benefit of the Torah's complete and perfect teaching was that it would restore our souls. Here he says it will make understanding easy for those who are receptive, simple for those who are receptive. So what we have here is receptive and soul being compared, and understanding being compared to restoration. Shub and Pithay. Shub, I should say, and Hakam, and then Nefesh and Pithay. Think about that. What God is saying here is that the means to restoration comes through understanding. If you come to understand his trustworthy and reliable testimony, then you will benefit from his restoration. That restoration is a derivative of understanding. That means you can think yourself through this process. Now, as it deals with the soul of those souls who are transformed, the comparison here is between the nephesh soul and those who are receptive, those who are open-minded. Those who are poisoned by religion are closed off. No amount of evidence and reason will change their mind. They are beyond hope. Those who are overtly political, those who are champions of socialist secular humanism, the evangelists of Christianity, the devotees of Roman Catholicism, the jihadists of Islam, are all closed to evidence and reason. If you present the truth to them, they will rail against it. They will attack the messenger. No amount of unassailable logic or absolute assured evidence will influence them. If you are going to be a saved soul, the very first thing that must happen is you have to be open and receptive to Yah's testimony. You have to be open to learning. If you are not open to learning, it isn't going to happen. The path to God flows through understanding. Understanding is the product of knowing. Knowing is the result of observing. Observe God's Torah, observe Yahweh's testimony, and you will come to know it. Think about it with an open mind, receptive to what God has to say, and you will come to understand it. And once you understand it, then you are in a position where you can respond, and God will restore and transform your soul. That is the message that is being communicated by these parallel statements. There is only one common denominator in these two statements. It's Yahweh's Torah is complete, perfect, returning and restoring the soul, and Yahweh's testimony is trustworthy and reliable, making understanding easy for those who are receptive. The common denominator, Yahweh. Otherwise, they are different perspectives on the exact same concept. Hard to find something as powerful, as relevant, as essential to forming a relationship with Yahweh, coming to know Him and understand what He is offering us, than this statement, because it tells you where to engage, where to look. You want to diligently seek Him? Observe His Torah. If you want to come to know Him, read His testimony. If you would like to engage in a relationship with Him, recognize that His Torah is the source of perfection and restoration. You want to know how to benefit from such restoration, becoming perfect? Make that journey from observing to knowing to understanding, and then respond. Be receptive to what you learn. Now, as you probably have ascertained, this is one of my favorite passages in the whole of Yah's testimony. I think it should be posted on the doorway of every home. The reason that the material and spiritual worlds here operate on the same set of instructions is because the author is the same. Since matter is nothing more than organized energy or a directed form of light energy, when we are directed and guided by the ultimate light, we become like light, brilliant and eternal. With this one statement, and in just seven words, Yahweh completely destroyed the religions of Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and Mormonism. Most everything that the wannabe Apostle Paul, Rabbi Akiva, the Prophet Muhammad, the wannabe Prophet Muhammad, and Joseph Smith wrote and exposed was completely contradicted by the testimony of the very God all four of these men claimed to have represented. As such, the only possible, informed, and rational decision that can be drawn from these irreconcilable differences between the Pauline doctrine, the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, the recital, Quran recital of Muhammad, and the Book of Mormon, and what God just said here, is that these men lied, all four of them. And the reason you can say that, because it isn't really a choice between Paul and Yahweh, between Akiva and Yahweh, between Muhammad and Yahweh, between Joseph Smith and Yahweh. The reason that it isn't is that these men all claimed to speak for him. And since he said the opposite of what they are saying, there is no chance that they told the truth. Because if Yahweh isn't who he claims to be, and if Yahweh's statements aren't trustworthy and reliable, then theirs are not, because they claim he is God. And because they contradict him, they therefore cannot be telling the truth. It is absolutely impossible, therefore, to be an informed and rational Christian, to be an informed and rational Muslim, to be an informed and rational Mormon. It is impossible to be an informed and rational religious Jew. That is the bottom line here. All of these religions, as they were founded, are untrustworthy and unreliable because they contradict the foundation that Yahweh laid for us, the foundation that restores our souls, the foundation that provides understanding. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back after the commercial break. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. In this particular statement that we were considering, Shub, which was rendered returning, restoring, and transforming, speaking of what it was going to do relative to our souls, Yahweh's Torah relative to the soul, it was scribed in the Hifl stem. That means that we are influenced by and benefit from a relationship which is established between our nefesh soul and Yah's Torah. The stem connects these things, establishing a relationship between them. This is what leads to our restoration and renewal. Further, Shub was written in the participle form, telling us that this restoration and renewal actually modify our soul, changing us so that we can return to God. And in the construct form, we find that all of this is a result of the Torah, and that the benefits of Shub are eternally associated not only with the Torah, but they connect our nefesh to the Torah. That was all part of the grammar associated uniquely by the Hebrew language. Also noteworthy, Aman, which was deployed to affirm that Yahweh's Iduth testimony is trustworthy and reliable, even informative, verifiable, and instructive, which, by the way, also defines Torah. It was scribed in the Nifl participle absolute. This means that trust and reliance are actionable, and that they are linked to Yahweh's witness. In fact, it is his testimony which facilitates trust and reliance, enabling them through informative instruction which is verifiable and thus confirming. There is an enormous chasm between trust and reliance and faith and belief. Faith and belief requires no understanding. In fact, you believe that which you do not know. You place your faith in that which you do not understand. When you know, you can trust. When you understand, you can rely. Faith and belief, therefore, are the antithesis of trust and reliance. They are what religions use when they can't prove, when they can't create understanding. And so God is saying here that his testimony, his teaching, provides the information that is necessary to understand so that we are in the unique position of knowing and therefore trusting and relying. No faith required. In fact, faith is counterproductive. The primary purpose of the Torah is to present the covenant. And we learned that there is only one covenant, not two. In stark contrast to Paul's mumblings, nothing was changed by the arrival of the so-called Christian God, their Jesus Christ. Not only isn't there a New Testament, the one and only covenant has not yet been renewed. One thing did not replace the other, rendering the other absolute. When Yahweh restores his covenant with Yisrael and with Yehudim, he's going to write his Torah inside of us. The Torah was never annulled. The covenant has not yet been renewed. Bluntly stated, the mythical person who has been characterized errantly as Jesus did not establish a new religion, a religion of Christianity. Paul did. Yahusha, the Word made flesh, confirmed the Torah prescriptions for living, instructions and directions of Yahweh are entirely true, completely reliable, and fully capable of enlightening our minds and restoring and renewing our souls. In fact, he would deliver the same message not once but twice during his largest and most famous public presentation, the Teaching on the Mount. Most Christians view God's words backwards, from the end to the beginning, rather than from the beginning to the end. Therefore, they miss this concept entirely. And in so doing, they become easy prey for the likes of Paul, the infamous wolf in sheep's clothing. Because they don't know or understand the Torah, they are susceptible to false prophets and their religious schemes. That is the story of their being beguiled. It is how they are beguiled. You have to have the proper perspective. You get the proper perspective by observing, by coming to know, processing that information, using your conscience, which is the source of good judgment, so that you understand it, and then you are in a position to respond. This is the story and the purpose of the Torah. We'll return to this particular insight when Shattering Myths returns its focus onto the Torah on Monday. But when we return to Shattering Myths after the top of the hour break, we will examine Islam.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has failed us.